to today's show. I'm Dr. Ed Poole, better known as the Lesson Guy, and my show comes your way every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time and noon Eastern Time. Take a look at my website at www.thelessonguy.com, and there you'll find out as you meander through the website more about my three books, the programs, and the consulting services that I offer. I'm also going to take just a minute here to talk about my newest book, which is going to be released May 1st here in a couple weeks. The book is titled Lessons from Empowering Leaders, Real Life Stories to Inspire Your Organization Toward Greater Success. And in writing this book, I interviewed 30 leaders from throughout the United States and Australia, and they shared their stories of both their successes and some of the mistakes in moving their organization toward the next level of success. Morgan James is publishing the book and is offering a fantastic pre-release savings of 34% off the retail price of the book, and so you can take advantage of this savings and do a pre-order by going to Amazon.com, and in the books category, just type in Lessons from Empowering Leaders. It'll pop up, and you can pre-order a book. My guest today is Jack Hatfield, and the title of today's show is Blessed with Tragedy, A Father's Journey with His Pre-Miracle. Jack and his wife had a baby girl, Jonna Lil, born on July 11, 2004. And Jonna was born under very difficult circumstances. She was born very prematurely, after only 27 weeks in her mother's womb. And the doctors were forced to take Jonna because of preeclampsia, and she weighed all of 1 pound 12 ounces. And from the time in the neonatal intensive care unit, Jack said he witnessed true success. And in that unit, neonatal care unit, is where the miracles began for Jack, his wife, and little Jonna. Jack had always wanted to be a writer, but never in his life, like me and many other people, thought it would be this story, which is about Jonna's miracle. The same title as today's show, and Jack will have a chance to remind you of that title later on in the show. In one piece of writing, Jack said, "What I want people to understand is that you are so alone when you first see your baby lying there in the NICU." Jack, welcome to the show.
How you do, sir? Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for being my guest today. Before we get started, I'd like to ask you to just share with our listeners a bit about your journey before Jonna Lil and some of the stops you made along the way.
Well, before Jonna Lil, if we're just going to talk about the pregnancy, just like every man and woman that has a dream of having children, you think everything's going to be normal. The old adage being, "I just hope they have 10 fingers and 10 toes,"
right,
is definitely something that you keep in the back of your head. And while we did have 10 fingers and 10 toes, they were just very small.
Yeah.
So I'm in the IT field. I'm a very logical person, and reading about pregnancy and how things were going, we went along quite well for 25 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a episode of just a touch of a high blood pressure, and we went and visited what was called the high risk clinic as a precaution, just so they would know who we were.
Mm-hmm.
They said, "We need to see you every week to make sure that everything's going to be okay." Well, we went the one time and met them. Everything was fine. We went back the following week. They said, "You're never leaving the hospital." Six
wow.
days later, they were forced to take Jonna Lil out.
Hmm. Well, I'd like to, with that as a little bit of a background, and we'll be talking a lot more about your introduction to our conversation today, but let me begin with a bit of a statement that I like a lot that you made, and then get to the question at the end of that. In one of your statements, you quote one of my all-time favorite poems titled "Call to the Come to the Edge," and it says, "Come to the edge, we can't, we're afraid. Come to the edge. We can't, we will fall. Come to the edge. And they came, and he pushed them, and they flew. And then you said, do not let the hero in your soul perish in lonely frustration for the life you deserved, but have never been able to reach. With that as a backdrop, Jack, how do these thoughts apply to both you and John Alil?
Well, the very first thing that I have to say is John Alil has died twice. She has physically heart stopped twice.
Wow.
And with that, now in my history and in hers, of course, she's not going to have much knowledge of that. But with that being in my history and watching and witnessing what she accomplished after dying twice and going through the struggles that she went through, I have absolutely no fear anymore.
Mm-hmm.
If you tell me that we have to jump off this cliff, I know I'm going to be okay.
Wow. That is quite an amazing statement to make.
It is an amazing statement to make, and it's so true. The things that she did, and this is kind of breaking me up when I think back a little bit, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
The things that she did and accomplished in front of me were bigger than anything you could see, and it was from the smallest of humans. And so that led me into witnessing what I know is inside every one of us, and that is every one of us can succeed because we have it in us before we were born.
And you know,
she came out before she was born.
That's something, Jack, that you and I have shared emails about.
Right.
That everything we need, and I'm just repeating, using my own words, what you just said, everything we need in our entire lives are placed there before we're born. Even, for me anyway, the what I call my authentic path was again laid out for me before I was born, and every time I take a detour from that path, something has happened in my life that really reminds me that I gotta rediscover that path somehow.
You're so right. I mean, I don't think I was on a path that I am on now.
No, I'm
prior to John Alil. She straightened it up and made sure that I have to tell people that they can succeed. I have to go around now because of her and make sure that I can uplift as many humans as I possibly can.
You have some opportunities then to talk with audiences about your experience?
Yes. We're ramping up an entire Natural Success Principles company where we're going to show everyone, and then I call them the Natural Success Principles because they're inside you before you were born. So
right.
There's a, you know, success principles are things you've learned, but the natural success principles are things inside you that you basically cover up. Life starts covering up these success principles, and these are things that are childlike. But
can you give us an example of a natural success principle?
One of the things that John was able to do naturally was test herself.
Mm-hmm.
There were periods of time where if she moved, her lungs couldn't create the oxygen that her body would need, and she would, what's called DSAD, and the oxygen in her blood would go down to a very critical level. However, if she never ever moved, she would never know when to stop.
Mm-hmm.
So if she never tested herself, she would never know where she could go or what her limits could be. And when you get to a limit, can you get past it?
Okay. And that's one of the differences, I think, probably between Jana and myself and some others, because she didn't know any better. I think in my case, it's happened a lot of times in my life when I've reached what I call is that limit of that outward boundary, I've been afraid to bust through that and realize everything that's out there for me.
And that's so true, Doctor. That's what I was saying. Most of the time we're covering up what was inside us when we were children.
Right.
society puts on something that says, hey, I feel that I'm at my limit. Well, maybe you feel you're at your limit, but you might not be. If you pushed a little harder, you may break through.
Right, and I think sometimes, Jack, it's been my experience that it's oftentimes other people who want to convince me that I'm at that outer limit and that's as far as I should go, because that's a bad judgment on their part, because they themselves have reached what they always desired or what they always thought they wanted, when in fact they really haven't, but they're afraid to bust through their own comfort zone. So the more people that they can convince to kind of stay where they are, the more comfortable they feel.
That's so true. In fact, I talk a lot about how people tear others down so that they seem equal versus
right.
lifting people up and getting there with them.
Right. It's I read a book a few years ago called Nibble Your Own Cheese, I think is the title of it. It's a very short book, and basically it's about what you just said, that other people will kind of nibble away at folks like you and me and lots of other folks until we get to that point that, even in my case, I don't really feel like I can go any farther.
Right, I agree with you. There are people that try to take you down to a level to where you say, I'm done, I'm finished, this is as high as I need to go.
Right. You said that it was in those first few months in that neonatal intensive care unit that you witnessed true success, and you've already talked about that a little bit, and you said this is where the miracles happened. And as you look back at that point, what did you mean by the words success and miracles?
I've been a positive person all my life. When you are hit with, you know, no parent wants to see their child die, and I witnessed mine die twice, but I didn't lose her in the process, so that doesn't correlate.
Mm-hmm.
But I almost lost her without ever knowing her, as she is now today.
Right.
So when you see that, I never let the negative portion of what could happen really enter my mind. Now, I'm not saying I went into it with a silly grin going, nothing's ever going to go wrong.
Right.
I did not allow the fact that she could leave and never know me, and me never know her, ever. When I went up to her the first time, I said, Daddy will take care of you, I promise.
Okay. And you were able to actually get that in your mind and feel that, during that time in the intensive care unit, right?
That was when I knew everything changed. I quit all of my jobs and I sat by her side. We got there at 7 a.m. and we stayed till 7 p.m. when the shift changed, and then we forced ourselves. We went to Taco Bell, we had two bean burritos, and then went home, and I called every hour because that's when they do an update on every child.
And I
never slept more than 59 minutes at any one given time for the entire year.
I was just going to say, I think you wrote somewhere that that the longest period of sleep you had was 59 minutes. And,
that's right.
And what kept you going with only 59 minutes at a time sleep during that first, what did you say, 12 months?
Well, yeah, I didn't sleep more than 59, because even when we brought her home in November, through all the way to when she was 1 year old, you have to kind of keep her on the NICU schedule. You just basically become the nurses.
Okay.
But you're at your house. You don't have to drive to the place. So what kept me going is her blue eyes. I made a promise to her that I would take care of her.
Mm-hmm.
And in making that promise to her, I also promised that what she was teaching me, I've got to go teach.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to spread what she's doing to me, because it was an amazing thing. It was a transformation, it's an indescribable transformation.
Mm-hmm. Well, what was it that allowed the doctors to say to you and your wife, she was born, what, in July?
Yeah, and July 11th, 7-11.
From there till November, and then you were able to bring her home in November. What had changed physically that they said, okay, you can now take her home? What was she doing then that obviously she wasn't doing at 1 pound, 12 ounces?
Well, she was breathing with still some oxygen in the nasal cannula in her nose, but she was breathing on her own. Now, when she came out of the womb, she was on a respirator, and then she actually went on what was called an oscillating respirator, which actually keeps the lungs inflated completely and circulates the air in the lungs about 60 times a second.
Oh.
So your baby's just sitting there basically vibrating.
Right.
It's not like a normal breath that me and you would take.
Right.
So, you know, 6 months down the road, the only issues that you have is that the baby needs to grow on food and not through the feeding tube that she's had this entire time.
Right.
One of the biggest decisions and knowledge that I went and gained and came back to the doctor and asked him, I said, when I feed her, I can hold her upright, and I'm telling you, take a 2 pound or, yeah, about 2.5 pound soup can and hold it out in front of you for an hour. And that's what I did. Every time I fed her, I would hold her directly in front of me for 1 hour upright, and she would fall asleep because the food was tiring and the eating was tiring, and she wouldn't spit up the food at all.
Okay.
One of the good things about a feeding tube is to make sure you get food in you.
Right.
The bad thing about the feeding tube is it doesn't allow the stomach to close.
Oh, okay.
So the sphincter, actually the thing that keeps all your food in your stomach, never ever really matures.
Uh-huh.
And so in my looking and figuring out that if I kept her upright, maybe I could strengthen the sphincter if we removed the feeding tube.
Right.
So me and the doctor had a great relationship, and I said, Doctor, please, can I try it? Can I feed her every time, hold her upright, and see if we can strengthen, you know, get that to heal?
Right.
And he said, we'll do it. If she loses weight for 3 days straight, we put the feeding tube back.
Now, was she just taking regular formula at that time?
Yeah, breast milk. Breast milk.
Okay. All right.
Breast milk's the best thing for a premature child because it gets the antibodies that they're going to need.
Right.
And that's the amazing thing about what my wife did. We pumped every 3 hours for the entire, you know, year and a half.
Right. Pardon me?
I'm sorry, just on the first day we lost weight, on the second day we lost weight, and on the third day we maintained weight, which gave me a reprieve. He gave me 1 day reprieve, and we gained weight the fourth day. And that's when they said, if she can keep her food down and gain weight, she's ready for you guys to, there's nothing more we can do if she doesn't have a feeding tube in her.
Okay.
So that's when we were able to do the training to take her home, the CPR. She, of course, had to wear an alarm, and she still had the oxygen, but other than that, we were able to take her.
When we come back from a break, I want to go back to something you said earlier because, you know, for me this was a difficult transition. I'll talk a little bit more about that when we get back. But you are a self-proclaimed techie, and what I want us to start talking about in the next part of our show is how difficult it was for you to get in touch with your feelings, and we will pick it up right there when we come back. But, folks, it is time for a commercial break, and Jack and I are going to be right back. This is Ed Poole, the Lesson Guy, with HealthyLife.net. Welcome back to today's show, everyone. I'm the Lesson Guy, and my show is aired every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern Time. My guest today is Jack Hatfield, and we're talking about Jack and his wife's unbelievable struggle and yet blessing with their very premature daughter, Jonna Lil. Jack, welcome back.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Before we get back to our conversation, which I have enjoyed very much, I'd like for you to take some time to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you to find out more about your book and your program and how you and others can help us through really any difficult time in our lives if we really want to feel better. So if you would just take a little time and share that with the audience.
Well, the very first place to go, and this book is the Blessed with Tragedy book is what I call the prelude. And what it is the encounter that we're talking about, we're discussing today. The next book is coming out either June 1st or July 1st, and it's called Natural Success Principles. And with it, we're launching the Anytime Success program.
Okay.
So if you, Blessed with Tragedy is a prelude, and you can go to blessedwithtragedy.com or Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or any bookstore, and you can get in touch with me and prepare for the Natural Success book at naturalsuccessprinciples.com.
Okay. And what was the second thing you mentioned, Anytime
Success? Anytime Success.
What is that?
Because of the way I was thrust into this situation,
mm-hmm.
and I could have given excuse after excuse after excuse not to have success with this situation. I hear people all the time talk about the economy, my job, my family, my relationship, my health, my weight, my car, my house, my problems, my grass. I mean, the smallest things that they can think of is in the way of making them reach their true potential.
Right.
So anytime success, we're going to eliminate all of your excuses and give you the path to success.
Now, will this be an online program or...
It will be an online program where we'll have mentors that you can ask questions of. Like if you have relationship problems that you think is holding back your success, you will ask the relationship guru.
Okay.
And then, you know, you go through the online continuance of how we're going to teach you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Folks, we're going to talk a little bit more in the show about the unbelievable number of... premature babies that are born every week and lead into a few other things from there. And many of you, I don't know, may have had this difficult experience yourselves, or you may have friends or relatives who have. And so take advantage of what Jack just shared with you, and he's going to share it with you again at the beginning of the next part of the show. Getting in touch, taking advantage of the new work that he has coming out. You'll find out how to order his current book and also take advantage of this new program that's starting. When Jack and I left off the last time, he had talked earlier about being a techie, a self-proclaimed techie, and I want to ask you how difficult it was for someone who had spent much time, I guess, in that line of work, how difficult it was to get in touch with your feelings. But I just thought something else I want to ask before we get into that. You were spending a lot of quality time with Jana. Were you self-employed, or what happened to your work during this period of time?
I've been self-employed since 1995, but I told all my customers what the situation was.
Okay. So you suffered some loss of income during this period of time, or no?
Absolutely. I would say I didn't make any, really, because I wasn't able to do anybody any good, because if I could do something, it was basically just to fix an issue, and that would be it.
Yeah.
We had a fundraiser at my parents brought together, and we raised $6,349, and that's what we kind of lived off of that
okay.
throughout the whole time.
Well,
that's why Taco Bell was mentioned. We ate 99-cent burritos.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, audience, I just want to again remind you that this sacrifice, this decision that Jack and his wife jointly made had far-reaching ramifications, but it was the kind of decision that they needed and wanted to make. But let's get back. In my own case, Jack, I grew up in a home that was basically people just didn't talk to people. I have a three-and-a-half-year-older sister than I, and Mom, Dad, my sister and I, we just really didn't hardly talk to anybody about anything. That's just the way it was in my home. And so I never let my feelings and emotions show. I never cried. It was, I don't think my dad ever said this to me, but I know a lot of fathers have said to their sons, real men don't cry. which again is a strong value judgment on my part, says that's probably one of the worst messages that a young man can get. But in your case, as a techie, was it difficult for you to find those feelings and emotions that were inside you?
I would have to say it was so difficult that I'm still not a pro at it. Back to the real men don't cry. I of course, have, you know, grown up with that same knowledge also, and you know, showing a sign of strength and not crying when John was sitting on the in the isolette or when she was up in the NICU was important to me for her and her mom, my wife.
Right.
I wanted to make sure that I showed them that I will be the rock through this. And when I had to hit the emotions, I kind of did it off to the side just to make sure that I had myself straight for when it was necessary.
Right. Then did you eventually find a point where you didn't have to let those emotions show off to the side?
They came when I got her home.
Okay.
I would say.
Okay. Well, we're going to pick up right from here, folks, when we get back from another commercial break. But it is that time. Jack and I are going to be right back in a few minutes. This is Ed Poole, the Lesson Guy, with HealthyLife.net. Hi, folks. Welcome back. Today I'm talking with Jack Hatfield, and our topic is how one man's tragedy became really a gift to many people and in many ways. Welcome back to the show, Jack.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Before we get going again, I'd like to ask you once again to tell our listeners how they can follow up with you after the show and get in touch, find out more about your book, and also a little bit more about the new program that you're starting.
Well, as I said before, you can go to blessedwithtragedy.com and you can order the book there or at Amazon or Barnes & Noble online. And the Natural Success Principles book, which is what I witnessed inside Jonna, is at naturalsuccessprinciples.com. And Anytime Success program will be launched somewhere around June 1st and July 1st.
Okay.
So you can go there, sign up, and get the details on that. The other thing that I want to mention is I started a foundation called the Early Journey Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does is whenever a parent calls us and says, we just gave birth to a premature child, we send them my book and the book called Preemies, which is written by doctors, which tells you everything that your premature child could go through
mm-hmm.
medically
mm-hmm.
so that you can make, you know, rational decisions when the doctor comes to you.
Right.
And then the other thing that we founded was premiracles.com, and it is the world's first and largest online social network for pre-miracles and those who love them. It's like the Facebook for preemies.
Okay. And when if they go to that website, what kinds of things are there to help them?
Well, I'm there,
okay.
In there, and the community is there. So you go online just like any other social network. You sign up. It's absolutely free. Anybody can join. You have a calendar. You can tell people what you're doing or how your baby's doing. You can keep a journal. You can then ask questions on the discussion boards, and they will be answered by other premature parents that have went through it, and I will be there answering, and we're just trying to help as many people as we possibly can, because once you walk up there, as you said early in the show, the loneliest thing you can do is sit there and watch your child helpless, and you want to help all they can, but you don't know how yet.
Right, and I think just picking up on what you just said, like other things in my own life, and I know based on a fact that Jack and I are going to talk about here in just a minute, even with the large number of premature babies born, did you find there are some parents who, without knowledge or without having a social network, sometimes still feel that they're pretty alone in their struggle?
After going through this, the amazing thing that I can tell you is that it's really a situation where if you're not in it at the moment,
mm-hmm.
it's very, very hidden.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, along with going out and helping everybody get, you know, achieve their peak potential, I'm trying to raise awareness that this is happening every minute. someone somewhere knows someone who has a premature child at any given time.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's an amazing fact, that one premature baby is born every minute. And just with that as a very brief backdrop, you and I talked earlier, maybe in the first part of the show, about everything happening for a reason. And this is a real deep question, I think. But with that thought in mind, what do you feel was the reason that Jana came into the life of you and your wife?
That's a great question, Dr. Ed, because I can tell you, as some of the story goes, is that I always knew I would have a boy, and I always knew that they would be a normal child and have absolutely no complications, because I had been planning, children for quite a while, and I actually had Disney movies from prior to even marriage and when I was young, to prepare for children. Mm-hmm. And I just always told everyone, I'll have a boy first, and then I'll have a girl.
Mm-hmm.
Girls actually live more than boys when they're born premature.
Okay.
Girls are unusually strong. African-American girls are the strongest in Caucasian girls or any other ethnicity girls, and then African-American boys, and then Caucasian boys are last. They actually quit. And it's just the doctors deemed it to me that it's actually a laziness that they see, that the boys just quit.
Mm-hmm.
They just give up. And girls tend to be unusually strong and keep going. And that's the amazing thing that I witnessed. And if, all of my statements that I'm going to have a boy were broken for a reason. And so everything that I had in my mind, every single scenario that I had in my mind is the exact opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And that shock, that the reason John O'Leary was brought into me is to shock me into doing what I'm doing now. It wasn't just a normal, everything that I was having. It wasn't my normal scenario. It's hey, Jack, check this out. It's going to be the exact opposite of everything you ever thought. And we're going to shake your foundation, and we're going to make you learn yourself.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes I've talked on other shows about my two hospitalizations in a psychiatric care unit with clinical depression, and it was at those times, and we talked, I talked a little bit earlier about an authentic path, or an authentic self, and it was at those times, I think, that the supreme being of my universal belief system in effect said to me, Ed, you have been so stubborn that somehow I got to get your attention. And those 2 stays in that psychiatric care unit were two of the most humbling experiences I've ever had. And out of both of those came, in a much different context, some tremendous blessings and gifts, just as Jana has been with you. But in my case, by golly, I had to get whacked upside the head, and it sounds like, using that metaphor or any other, that's maybe another reason Jana came along.
Yes, I think it was to shake the foundation to where I build a new house.
I like that concept, to shake the foundation so you could build a new house. And that's what you're doing.
Yes. I'm going a completely different path.
Johnny is going to be 5 years old in
July.
2 to 3 months here.
That's right.
And what's going
33
on?
33 pounds and 3 feet tall.
Pardon me?
33 pounds and 3 feet tall.
Oh, my gosh. And so she's doing well.
She's doing remarkable. She has a small speech impediment because when you're intubated, which is the tube that forces your respirator, it actually pushes up on her palate, which wasn't finished. So the top roof of your mouth, which is, a hard bone for me and you and all normal other babies,
sure,
was not finished for her. So the tube actually put pressure on it and made it very high. So she had to overcome that with just learning how to speak with that.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes when I want answers to questions, I look in places that I decide I want to look into, where I think anyway I know I'll find them. And how did you learn then, with that as a backdrop, to be open to everything and then therefore to find answers in unexpected places?
The quick answer to that is when I was faced with a decision, such as the retinopathy surgery, which is, I'll go into detail on that in a little bit.
Okay.
I had to find out everything about it so that I gave her the correct decision, because if I messed up, you know, I'm punishing John a little for my ignorance, and I made sure that that was not going to happen.
Okay. And that's exactly where we're going to pick up, folks, when Jack and I get back. It is time for another commercial break. Jack and I, once again, are going to be right back, which I'm grateful for. This is Ed Poole, the Lesson Guy, with HealthyLife.net. Here we are again, folks. Welcome back to the Lesson Guy. My guest today is Jack Hatfield, and we are talking about lots of amazing lessons and experiences that he and his wife and their soon-to-be 5-year-old Jana have had in a very short period of time, and how that experience with her extremely premature birth has altered everyone's lives for the betterment. And as Jack said, to begin building a new foundation for a new home as a metaphor. And all of that, I'm sure Jack would agree, has been a blessing. We left. Welcome back, Jack.
Thank you, sir.
I forgot to welcome you back.
That's okay.
Last time, before we left for a break, you were talking about one of the early decisions you made that had to do with Jana's vision. Can you talk a bit more about that?
When the doctors first came and said we have to remove her from the womb to save both mother and child, I said, can I take a day to make this decision that that's okay? And they said, absolutely. So I stayed up all night reading on what happens when a premature baby's born, what's not finished. You know, the toothpick's still gooey on the inside like a cake, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to make sure that I learned everything I possibly could in that one night. And the very first thing that I found out was ROP, retinopathy of prematurity, was the biggest problem. Your retina is not finished, and once it comes out and sees oxygen, it tries to finish quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And in that process, the vessels actually try to get to the end of the retina and could tear it.
Mm-hmm.
So the first decision being, we see signs of ROP in the child. Do you want to have laser surgery? And what that actually does is destroy the retina on the outside of where the veins aren't.
Okay.
So that they don't have any more signals to go. So they think they're at the end of the retina. And that reduces her peripheral vision. I mean, it takes that away.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had to destroy pieces of the retina.
Mm-hmm.
But it again lets her see. So my first thing to the doctor when I came back that following day, when they said, can we take her out, or we need to take her out, I said, whatever we have to do, I don't want her blind. That would just seem like the ultimate unfair move to me. If,
mm-hmm.
if she's premature, goes through all this, and she still can't see, you know, this wondrous planet.
Mm-hmm. And I can't believe, because I obviously haven't experienced it, that it's difficult to understand the amount of research that you must have done online through books or whatever to help get you up to speed. Is that a fair statement?
I read a total of 19 premature books.
Wow.
And probably 170 studies in different aspects on premature children.
Mm-hmm.
I even brought studies in when they would ask me a question. I would always ask if you would give me the evening so I can answer you in the morning. And they were able to do that on most cases. Now, one or two cases, of course, we had to make a decision right then.
Mm-hmm.
But I would bring in studies, and I would go, look, I've got 10 studies that give me a 70% chance. I've got 2 studies that give me a 30% chance. I think I want to go with this one.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd say, I've never seen this study. Can I take this? And the doctor actually, you know, I brought in some new stuff for him, so I thought that was pretty good, too.
That's exactly right. I can't remember, Jack, to be honest, because we're having such a great conversation here, if we were talking before the break or during the break about Jana's height and weight right now.
She's a little over 3 feet tall and 33 pounds, so she's very, very thin.
yeah, but filling out. that kind of leads me into this next question that maybe you can talk a little bit more about. And I've got some facts that I really, some information I got from you off your website. There are about three or four things here. Fewer than 50% of low birth weight preterm infants, those below 1,000 grams survive, and Jana had 801 grams. Number two, of those who do not survive, 91% live less than 2 weeks. Three, many survivors have neurological defects, cerebral palsy, or learning disabilities. Number four, many infants on a respirator suffer from retinal issues, which you just talked about. The mature systems, such as the lungs, digestive systems, aren't prepared to act outside the womb. Chronic lung disease appears in 30% of these infants, and only about a third of low birth weight babies have a normal IQ by the age of two. So, I mean, that was just a gazillion statistics that I threw out that you are well aware of. Which ones that I just mentioned has Jana been able to this point, being almost 5 years old in a couple months, how many of those has she been able to beat?
Well, because her lungs were so underdeveloped, they said she will have asthma and chronic lung disease all of her life. Now, chronic lung disease doesn't, you know, sounds very bad, but what that means is there's a portion of her lungs that's just never going to work.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that she's going to have to take pills or respirators or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
She has a portion of her lungs that actually stuck together and destroyed the aerial, the alveoles in her lungs, so they can't produce the oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
So we're supposed to have asthma. We're supposed to be on inhalers. We're supposed to not be able to read. She can read already.
Wow.
Yeah, she's reading at probably, you know, very pre-K level. She can read any three-letter word you put in front of her.
Wow. That is so amazing.
Yeah, and it's just us working with her. We've kept her on a schedule. It's discipline. It's all about discipline.
Mm-hmm.
When we brought her back from the NICU, her schedule was feed at every 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we did. Fed her every 3 hours, including throughout the night. Wake her up and feed her.
Right. We know the research, having been a public educator for most of my professional career, the research is very strong that the students who perform the best in school are those who receive a lot of help, a lot of encouragement, a lot of support, a lot of interest at home. And my gosh, you've been showing that to Jana, which in some ways probably accounts for the fact that she can read almost any three-letter word you put out in front of her.
I would say so. It would have to be all of our attention. Like my promise that was made to her that I would take care of her, that's what I'm doing. And my goal in life is to simply wake her up and put her to bed every night, no matter what. So, you know, you can't work a normal job that way, so I have to go out and make my impact as much as I can, but then make sure I get home and tuck her in.
That's an amazing dedication. And Jack, I can tell you how much of a blessing it's been for me, and I'm sure for the listeners, to have you on the show today. I've learned so very much about, a topic I knew next to nothing about, and you've helped me to do that, and I'm sure for many people in the audience. So, again, folks, please take advantage of these opportunities Jack has mentioned to find out more, to find out how you can assist with the Early Journey Foundation that they've started, and just take advantage of it. So, Jack, again, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you, Doctor. I really appreciate it.
Good. Thank you very much. And, folks, we'll be right back after the commercial break. Welcome back to the final part of today's show, everyone. And if you've been listening for the whole show, you've realized we've touched on a lot of important topics, some painful, but also full of joy and blessings. As I mentioned earlier, as a youngster and into my adult years, I had a lot of difficulty finding my emotions and my feelings and really my true self. I hadn't, as I said, connected my head with my heart and soul. I thought, I didn't feel. And Jack was faced with his important insight when Jana was born, and I know it was a revelation and a blessing for him. And when we use the left side of our brain, we can analyze, plan, and implement, but we have to discover the right side of our brain and learn how to create, feel, learn how to cry, and bring to the surface those emotions that have always been deep inside us. And I guess I'd like you this week to think about getting in touch with your emotions, your feelings. Let those show in whatever part of your life you would like to, and see what happens. Thanks for being on the show today. This is Ed Poole, the Lesson Guy, with HealthyLife.net. See you all next week.